Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are there any good people running for political office in this country? What is going on? Welcome to Drive Time. It's Jason. I am trying to figure out who we blame the most for this debacle in Maine with Graham Plattner. The nation has been captivated by this, partially because a number of Minnesota politicians went out there and campaigned for him. The governor, Tim Walz, endorsed this guy from the beginning. So did our outgoing U.S. Senator Tina Smith, which has me wondering if we have absolutely failed as a public, as a voting bloc, because we have allowed politics to be turned into sports. We cheer for our team no matter what, no matter what. And so with Graham Plattner, the Nazi adjacent tattoo that he had wasn't enough. The skeezy Reddit post wasn't enough. The sexting with other women while he was married wasn't enough. The initial accusations that he was sexually harassing and sexually assaulting women, well, that wasn't enough. Especially because the woman making the accusation was a Republican. I think that's like, you know, a Packers fan telling you that the Vikings are cheating. We can't believe that. And now, finally, there's a rape allegation from a fellow Democrat who was hesitant to tell her story because she believed in Graham Plattner's politics. What has happened to us as a voting public, as a society, that we just are so unwilling to see our team take a hit, we can never call out our own guys. 651-461-9226. Do you think we have some responsibility for this? Because we're just as bad as voting, as the voting public. I see it in the text messages. And you know, like, I don't want to send up like the bat signal. Because whenever I say anything against Donald Trump, everybody just, all the Trump fans go nuts. But let's be real, the accusations against Donald Trump, if these were accusations against his opponent in the last election, Kamala Harris, people would be howling about it. But we only howl about it when it's not our guy, when it's not our team. And the only thing I can think of to fix this, because we're not going to have some massive morality, like massive come to Jesus moment where we start calling out our own people, right? Like, that's not even, I'm not even asking you to do that because I just, it's not reasonable. It's not. We need a third party. There needs to be another choice. There needs to be a trio of options so people aren't so jammed into this binary. And this binary has caused us to absolutely lose our minds. 651-461-9226. On Facebook, Barry is noting all the Democrats who supported him now claim the high road. Hypocrites all. My question to Barry is, would he be willing to call out an example of somebody on his side that he disagrees with their morality? There is no morality in politics. There just isn't. That shark has been jumped, right? I think when the president of the United States has two dozen accusations against him, And again, like same with Graham Plattner, these accusations may or may not be true. But there's a lot of smoke there, right? With Donald Trump, there was a guilty conviction in a sexual, well, you know, what was the term? It wasn't fully sexual assault in that E. Jean Carroll case, but it was, you know, I mean, it was a $5.8 million judgment in a civil case. He was found liable for sexually abusing her. And I'm here to say that, like, a lot, I do understand this idea that accusations may or may not be true, but I also only see people pointing that out when it's their guy. Like, we have turned politics into sports. We don't care about the overall right thing to do or the right kind of person. We just cheer for our team. That's it. We made a deal when people went and voted for Donald Trump. And the deal, I think, I guess I'm curious where people are on this. I think people are fine on it, to be honest. The deal that was made is that we know that this candidate is questionable as a human being. But we like the policies. We like the bluster. We like the straight talk. There are things that people said we like. I think when we made that choice, we became more similar to a lot of European countries where for years you have seen, you know, people who are known to be cheaters, people who are known to be liars, who would be elected to governmental positions. And so this morality thing is, I think, been a more American desire for our politicians than what you see around the world. But I think a deal was made and people said, well, we want the policies. We think this person, we're going to just dismiss all these concerns. Now, the Republicans who are howling about Graham Plattner, you know, do they feel the same way about Donald Trump? I don't think so. Like, it's sports. It's become sports. We are unable to call out our own guys. And when you see it, what you see is what happened to Dean Phillips. Right? Dean Phillips was absolutely excommunicated from the Democratic Party for daring to speak out and say that Joe Biden was too old and he wasn't able to do the job anymore. And he was destroyed. He was destroyed. Texters say you need to go back to Clinton, who was impeached for lying about his affair with a young intern. Monica got more blame than Clinton. If you checked every president, you would probably find a number of them with skeletons. I do think that is true. But what's different now is you know about the skeletons and you decide that you don't care. Right? Like, that's different. And the Clinton-Lewinsky scandal was 1998. And was he reelected after that?
No.
Because that was his second term,
yes,
right?
He was initially elected in 92, so his second election would have been 96.
So that was it. Yeah. So it's just a different scenario. The Clinton scenario, for sure, I think you look at those years and you think about the way we understand kind of sexual harassment and power structure of a boss. I think today people would react to the Clinton Lewinsky situation differently, don't you?
I do, but I think where there is a similarity is that people lined up either for him or behind him, not because they had great concern or lack of concern for Monica Lewinsky, but based on their political
just
leanings.
Where
remember?
They were, yeah.
It was a vast right wing conspiracy that was out to get him, and that's what was going on. Well, no, it wasn't.
Yeah,
you know, and
yeah.
And the folks that were after him, again, were, you know, throwing stones in glass houses. Much of the time, as
right.
We would come to find out
right.
Later on. So
we're getting a fair number of texts about Clinton, which I would just say, when you have to go back almost 30 years for your other example, it's a long time ago. We don't have to relitigate Bill Clinton every time this comes up. Although I'm sure some of you would like to say, well, where were you speaking out about Clinton? To Russia? Like, well, I was 12, so I and quite frankly, I was a very Alex P. Keaton style young Republican. So I'm sure I was speaking out against Bill Clinton because this is what we do. I don't think it's the same as it was. I do think there used to be a greater willingness to throw out your guy if they were seen to be like a potential drain. It wasn't so much that you were fighting for the moral thing, but it's that the voters used to judge someone for being a moral scumbag. And today, you guys defend it. You deflect to Clinton. You have the governor of Minnesota going to Maine to campaign for this guy who the red flags were up the wazoo. And you just do it because you want to win. People want to win. It's sports. We've turned it into sports, and we've lost our moral compass. Let's break. Lots of text coming in. Kevin, stand by. We'll get to you. 651-461-9226. Drive Time back in a minute. No one party gets off the hook on this thing. This is everybody. This is not me ranting about President Trump. This is me ranting about the fact that every party is so dedicated to home team cheering that we are unwilling to call out our own people. And we saw Democrat after Democrat line up to support this dude because his story was good, this Graham Plattner. Now, he has denied it. We should play his denial. He's been accused of sexual assault by a 41-year-old Maine woman who dated him. Politico had the story. And she said that he forced her to have sex with him nearly 5 years ago. He denied the allegations.
I wanted to directly address the troubling, serious, and false allegations against me. Any accusation of non-consensual behavior is categorically false. Over the last 10 months, I have been deeply humbled by the faith Mainers have put in me. You have welcomed me into your homes, into your places of work, into your restaurants, into your houses of worship.
So you get the idea there. So he denies it, but he also is accepting the political reality. A texter says, Jason, we always say we need to vote better politicians into office, but where the hell do we find these better politicians? I think about that too, right? Like, can we get some normal people running for politics? Why is it always got to be some person with the biggest skeletons in their closet? I understand that we're in this moment where there's a rejection of sort of the, you know, corporate created in a lab, super clean, super tidy politician. We want real people, and real people are messy. But real people do not have to be this messy. Right? And it was obvious. Wasn't it obvious at the beginning? I laid out the number of things that people dismissed before it was finally too much. Kevin is in Anoka at 651-461-9226. Kevin, why do you think we're so unwilling to call out our own people, our own party?
Oh, I have no problem calling out either party. I think I'm really tired of these women who come out 5, 10, 15, 25 years after the fact, and then all of a sudden this horrendous event happens to them. I think we need to have a point system, and you lose 20 points for every year that you don't say something. And after 10
Kevin,
years,
people,
you just don't have any points.
But people don't come out with an accusation maybe against a rando, right? But when that person steps up and runs for higher office, isn't it reasonable where you say, like, I think people need to know about this, and so you come forward.
Oh, then you should have done something about it, and the person would have been in jail, and they'd be a convicted felon.
Yeah, I think that's easier. That's pretty easy to say, but we know, like, for decades and decades, how difficult it is for people to be believed with their accusations of sexual assault, especially, right?
Well, the problem with
look at Paula Jones, who Hillary Clinton said was a liar.
Well, Hillary Clinton would stand on the rooftop and say her man is perfect no matter what. She rides his coattails anywhere.
I'm just saying it's hard to be taken seriously as someone who accuses, especially a powerful man, of sexual assault. I can understand why people sometimes take their time. I do get your point, though, that there are times that you look at it, and I think it's fair to have a little skepticism. I know, like, we were in this era where people were saying, believe women, believe women. Well, I would say believe believable women, right? And maybe
I think,
when you see a lot of smoke around somebody like you did with Graham Plattner, like, I don't know, with each accusation, my willingness to believe the other accusations goes up, right?
Well, the problem is there's been far too many women who have made accusations that have turned out to be absolutely baseless, and there's been no legal repercussions against them for committing perjury.
Do you think Graham Plattner should drop out of the race, the Democrat in Maine?
It's their guy. If they want to vote for their guy, let them have him. They deserve who they vote for.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it. 651-461-9226. I don't think a point system. I would not be on board with that. That is for sure. You know, my other point at the beginning, talking about the need for a third party, this texter says, I started out as a never Trumper, but when it came to Election Day in 2015, I couldn't stay home and allow Hillary Clinton to become president. Texter says a third or a fourth party is what we need because we do not have good choices. Frankly, I still think Trump is despicable, and I held my nose to vote for him a third time. Yeah, I think I just don't see a way out of this cycle, Dan, this cycle of no matter what, we're going to defend our guy. I just don't. I don't think it's realistic. I mean, yes, I wish people would start. You would get more Dean Phillips, right? More people willing to call out your own team and say, like, this ain't it. This is not what we stand for. But I think too many people have decided just winning is most important. And the morality only matters when it's the other guy doing something immoral. It's sort of how we feel about cheating in the World Cup. Except the World Cup is a game, and this is not. And I think we apply that sort of same thing, and I was applying that conditional morality yesterday in the World Cup.
I will correct you on one thing.
Yes.
You said this is not. This shouldn't be, but I think you made the point earlier in the segment. We've turned it into that. We've turned it into a game.
Yeah.
It's a game that's linked to our identity, so that that's why we have to fight tooth and nail over it. We can't possibly be wrong. The other side can't possibly have any valid points, because then that threatens our very identity, which is based on this tribalism, this party tribalism.
But like, there's a guy on Facebook right now commenting who's anti-Trump, talking about all the sexual allegations, and says, we're supposed to believe this one woman who comes out magically as Plattner is running for office? It's like, well, it's sort of yes, right? Like, can't you do better? This is where, and this was my view on Donald Trump, that I don't believe that Donald Trump is a singular being. And I think too often we've turned our politicians into like godlike creatures, that no one can do this but them. And like, a lot of people could advocate for these same policies. Do I think Donald Trump is a singular creature in American politics? Yes. Do I think Donald Trump is the only person that could have been elected to advocate for tariffs and for, you know, all of the policies that Donald Trump has supported? No, I don't. And I think voters have bought into this, like, this sort of Hollywood star version, I think, is sort of how you think about it.
Sure.
The celebrity version that, like, oh, well, this is the only person who could do it, so I better defend them to the end.
Go right back to the Republican nomination process for this last presidential election, right? How many times have we heard people say, well, I don't really like him. I wouldn't have a beer with him, but I don't elect a guy to do that stuff. I elect him because he's got the right policies.
Yeah.
I mean, I would challenge anyone to try to convince me that you would get markedly different policies from a Nikki Haley or a Ron DeSantis or anybody else that was running against the president in that nomination process. And yet he won that nomination overwhelmingly. I mean, it wasn't even remotely close. And so The distinguishing factor is you had professional politicians and you had Trump, who you knew would bring some of the circus and some of the fight and some of the other stuff. So you can try and tell me it's about the policies, but it's not. It's about the fight. It's about, we want this guy because he stirs something in people that no other Republican did. And whether that's just, I think he can win and I don't think these other two can, whatever.
Right.
But the point is, you know, it's not a policy thing with him. It's never been a policy thing with him. It's a personality thing. And people gravitate towards it for whatever reasons. And that's why he's been president twice.
A woman texts in and says, the I would believe her if is so annoying as a woman, because even if she did come out all that time ago, men like Kevin would have another if for her to jump through. I didn't press charges against my boyfriend for our non-consensual experience. But if I find him pursuing a place of power where I believe he could hurt people, I'd consider it. I think that is so understandable. So understandable. And so that text is worth tucking away in the back of your head for the next time one of these comes out. Because people delay coming forward for all sorts of reasons that are their reasons. Now, if you are the victim of a false accusation, and I was talking about this yesterday, anybody could make any accusation about me. Would it sink me? Probably. It is the world we're in. And I'm not sure how to fix that either. We do have a legal system. You do have a chance to fight. But I do think there are certain circumstances where there's enough smoke. And we don't have to trip over ourselves to be protecting people just because they share our political ideology. Let's break in a minute. Interesting story in the paper today talking about shopping centers. The end of shopping centers. It just got me thinking about where you guys are doing most of your shopping. Are you going to the mall? Are you going to a shop? What are you doing? 651-461-9226. A reminder, today is Twins Ticket Tuesday. And so we are giving away a 4-pack of tickets for this Saturday. It's the Twins and the Angels. Luther Key of Bloomington drives Twins Ticket Tuesday. So check out their brand new showroom in Bloomington or check them out at LutherKeyofBloomington.com. Now, it's Dick Bramer being inducted into the Twins Hall of Fame on Saturday, July 11th. So that'd be a fun one. Twins.com/tickets. We're giving away those tickets to caller 3. Not now, but when Dan plays the magic Twins sounder, make sure you call in and win. Twins baseball on CCO, the home of the Twins, tonight. First pitch at 6:40 on CCO. I was trying to think of the last time I went to, like, one of the newer shopping centers in the Twin Cities. And the answer is Sunday. On Sunday at about 12:30, Alyssa wanted to get food for lunch. We had dinner plans at a friend's house that we were going to at 4 o'clock. So it was like 12:30 and they're like, we better eat something now. And we're in Maple Grove. So we pulled into the shops at Arbor Lakes where we were going to go to Punch Pizza. And there was nowhere to park. So I pulled right out of the parking lot and got on the highway. That was the last time I went to one of the Twin Cities newer shopping centers. Axios Twin Cities headline, a decade without a major shopping center is squeezing Twin Cities retailers. It's kind of interesting that rent is going up. Retail rent in the Twin Cities last quarter grew almost 7%, largest rent hike in the nation. And so What I find amazing about this story that basically says there's a lack of space for retailers and restaurants. The last two big shopping centers that opened was City Place in Woodbury and Central Park Commons in Eagan in 2016 and 2017. Now, Woodbury City Place is like the shopping center where it used to be like that, wasn't it insurance headquarters? Like State Farm was over there, I think. I mean, it's not like it's like the shop. What are the Woodbury shops? They have this. It's the same bit, right? Like shops at Woodbury Lakes or something like that. These are basically like glorified strip malls. Egan Central Park Commons is the same bit too. There's like a big old Hy-Vee in there, and then a Hobby Lobby and a Total Wine. So it's like the classic suburban, like giant parking lot, big box store. I was surprised that there's a shortage of these things, because aren't all of these big box stores like sort of going by the wayside? We have plenty of grocery stores, and frankly, you feel like you never have enough grocery stores, right? The grocery store can never be close enough to you. But I'm curious. I'm like, what do people need? Like, what's, you know, when you think about like what stores you would want, like what, I don't know. Don't we have enough? Have I gotten to that point of life? We have enough stores. Can't we just backfill? Like, didn't all the, aren't there plenty of abandoned stores out there? I don't know. The story in Axios is pointing out that the Twin Cities suburbs are pretty full. And the typical shopping center today, like I had not really considered this as a shopping center, but I guess this is the predominant thing. Like you've got the big mall, right? Like the indoor mall or the outdoor mall, like in Maple Grove, and there's the outlet malls in Egan and at Albertville. And then you have the strip mall, like the old school strip mall. But I didn't think about these, like they call these power centers, which makes it sound way cooler than it is. But that they're full. The only spot really left is like Northeast Blaine, Lakeville, Rosemount, and then that way northwest corner of Maple Grove where like Lifetime is opening that brand new fitness center up by the Target and everything. Are you guys going to stores? I feel like everyone I know that is under the age of 50 gets everything delivered to their house. And even if it's grocery, if it's Target or Walmart, they're getting that delivered to their house. Isn't everybody just, no one's leaving their house anymore, are they? Do we need more strip malls? Have you guys been driving around your suburbs thinking, you know what? You know what we need? More strip malls. Oh, more suburban giant parking lots. Wouldn't that be amazing? That's just sort of weird to me. Now, living in downtown St. Paul, I wish I had a Cub close to me, you know? And it's not that far. You go to Maplewood or whatever, but like, we're getting an Aldi.
Not as close as
I don't like
where
Aldi.
You're living in Maple Grove to get to a Cub.
In Maple Grove, like, I could roll out of bed and be at like a grocery store. Yeah. There are like seven.
I think people want the shopping center, right? They want it to be filled with mom and pop places because we all hate Amazon and Walmart and all of these big boxers that are ruining the world and creating kajillionaires. And we, you know, and then when it comes down to it and I need to get something and I can't go, I don't have time to go get it. And I can click a button on my phone and it can be there in 2 hours. We just do that because it's easier and that's life and that's just what we do. So I understand the hesitancy. I mean, it's you know, to build one of those has to cost a ton of money, and you have to get a bunch of tenants that are going to sign longer-term leases to make it, you know, viable. And I think, like I said, I think people want that kind of access, or they want to want it, but when it comes down to real life, that's, you know, it's we vote with our phones now, right? You know what I'm saying?
And a texter points out, actually, maybe the most interesting reuse of shopping centers we've seen in the Twin Cities has been this proliferation of Asian malls. So a texter says they're building a new Asian mall inside of Burnsville Center. Mm. They just opened a new Asia mall in Blaine, and they already have one in Eden Prairie. And it's sort of like combo food court / ethnic grocery store.
That's what, I mean, the old school shopping center isn't going to be viable anymore.
I don't think so.
Because Amazon and the big boxers have just killed it. But
other than luxury, like,
well, that's just it. You have to find stuff that isn't easily accessible the same way that everything else is, right? So you have to find, there has to be a theme, there has to be an experience, there has to be some sort of product that isn't easily attainable You have to have that in order to make it work.
Texter says they need a fabric store, not necessarily a strip mall, but a fabric store. It's true. You used to have like all those Joann fabrics. There were a lot more fabric stores. There's that big one up in Maple Grove, the SR Harris, or that's in Brooklyn Park. But yeah, the kind of Michaels style fabric store. Yeah, I don't know. We have like dollar stores and then we have luxury. And Dan's right. I think everything else in the middle, you sort of are, you're getting it delivered. Let's break in a minute. I want to talk about National Dive Bar Day. I love a dive bar. What's your favorite? 651-461-9226. Drive Time back in a minute. Twins ticket Tuesday is today. Four-pack of tickets to Saturday. This weekend, it's going to be hot. And summertime at the ballpark, you know what? Shirt's optional. So if you win those Twins ticket Tuesday, four-pack of tickets, shirt's optional. That's according to me.
Isn't the whole tarps off thing? Isn't that like a thing?
That's
this year
a thing now,
now
yeah.
I'm not sure that's a good idea.
This weekend, Seth was at the Yankees Twins game in New York.
The one we lost?
No, he was at the one we won.
All right. One of the two that we won.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And he.
Otherwise, I was going to blame him.
So I was watching on TV, and they had like.
The tarps off people.
100 or 200.
Yeah, that's a thing.
College boys with their shirts off. I don't know. Have your fun, right? When Dan plays the thing, be the caller and do the deal. Okay. I promoted it, all right? At least I did it. It's National Dive Bar Day, and I hope everybody celebrates today. Now, some texters coming in. 651-461-9226. I want you to flood the text line with your favorite dive bar. We have Schuller's in Golden Valley. Not sure if it meets the criteria. I think so. That place has been around long enough. I think that's a winner. Another texter says Jimmy's on Cedar in South Minneapolis. Great food, tacky atmosphere. You need the tacky atmosphere. You need, like, I like Grumpy's in Northeast because it's simple. You know what they have at Grumpy's? Beer. It's a bar. Like, they have some wine. Do you want to drink it? No. I think if you, any bar that has wine that you look at and you're like, I can't order that, it might be a dive bar. Might be a dive bar. Dive bars are great. Grumpy's is a good one. I don't keep them. Sandy's is another good one. Dusty's, very good. Keep the text coming. Continental Diamond Time Check, $358. Yeah, you can wear your luxury pre-owned timepiece from Continental Diamond into your neighborhood dive bar. It's called Living High Low. It's fantastic. Check out their selection at ContinentalDiamond.com. Can you ask somebody out at the gym? We'll talk about that with Ask Age.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Adri. All right, it is Tuesday, Drive Time with DeRusha on the air. Lots of good texts coming in about your favorite dive bars. So keep those coming throughout the show. It is National Dive Bar Day. You're welcome to send us a voice message telling us about your favorite dive bar on the Odyssey app. Click the talkback microphone right next to where you listen live. Texter saying Ted's on Larpenter in St. Paul. No kitchen. Cash only. Dark. If kids are with you, you're strictly limited to one drink. Outside food is allowed. There's TVs. There's a pool table. That's pretty good.
Can I put in a dark horse?
You can.
Frenchman's.
Frenchman's, very good.
Yeah, in Richfield, where I live.
That's a dive bar.
Yeah, it's the diviest. I'm pretty sure they have carpet in there, and they definitely have pull tabs.
If you have carpet in your bar, you're either in Greater Minnesota or you are a very old Twin Cities. That just seems foolish to me, right? That is the voice of Adrian Lee. It is Ask Adri, our monthly advice segment, and you get the chance to text in and ask Adrian anything you want. 651-461-9226 is our number. People can read your writing at
Substack, at Ask Adri at Substack.
ADRI. So correct. Check that out. All right, let's start with a question that I think is fascinating. Because, you know, as a married, old married guy, I'm very curious about like how the kids today ask people out.
Yeah, I would say you're morbidly curious.
You think I'm too curious?
No, not too curious. It is a wild time to be alive.
I don't know any of this stuff, right? And it's, you know, I have friends who get divorced, and then I learn all sorts of things, and it's crazy out there.
Sorry to interrupt, but we do have just a little bit of breaking news.
Okay.
As home of the Twins, we should get this on. Twins just announced that they're going to put Byron Buxton on the 10-day injured list with his hip issue that flared up on him again. Alan Roden being called up from AAA St. Paul to replace him, presumably playing tonight.
So. He was in business for a couple games in New York, but then he had a stolen base.
Stolen base and tweaked the hip on the steel.
And so there you go.
Not a huge surprise, but just coming out now. So I want to make sure people are up to speed on that. Sorry.
Nothing to apologize
for. I mean, I know Adrian's a huge baseball fan.
Huge
so.
Baseball fan. Huge sports fan.
Where are you on Alan Roden?
Google. I'm on Google.
Alan Roden, you've been a big Alan Roden supporter since the early days.
Possibly, yeah. What is he? Is there like a position?
Yep, he is an outfielder.
Okay, baseball, Twins.
Yeah,
huge fan. Because why not?
He's close to one of us. Grew up in Middleton, Wisconsin, which is
close enough.
Close enough, right? Do we take a... Where is Middleton? Isn't that near Madison, I think?
It's in Wisconsin.
It's right near Madison. Yeah. So when you drive on 94 into Madison, it's by the Lake Mendota.
All right. I think Milwaukee is like the superior Wisconsin city.
Ooh! Best city in Wisconsin. 651. All right, so... Here's our question, because the gym is a very common place where young people would be gathering in real life. Is it appropriate to ask someone out at the gym?
Well, I love that I'm being included in this nebulous young people. I'm going to pretend I am.
You're not that young.
I'm not at
no.
all. Thank you.
But you're at the gym.
So here's the thing. I have to be really honest before I answer the question. I hate the gym so much that I have a piece of cardio equipment. I have a rower at my house because I don't want to go to the gym.
You don't want to.
And I have free weights. And so I say all that to say, if I am at the gym, it is so thoroughly against my will that I am not in a state to meet anyone. And I think my face and my aura would share that. So it is not a place to meet me. One, because I'm not trying to be there. And two, if I'm there, I'm angry.
I feel like this is the correct attitude about the gym
in general. Thank you. Like, just don't go.
I personally do not believe anyone who claims to like really enjoy working out.
No.
I don't believe it.
I don't either.
You know what's enjoyable? Eating.
It feels good to be done working out.
Yep.
Because you got the endorphins running through your body.
Yep.
You did the hard thing.
Would you date a gym guy?
No.
Why not?
Because, okay, what do you mean by a gym guy? Because that's like a really particular kind of guy to me. And it is somebody who is like probably talking about their workout in their dating bio or on the first date.
For sure.
Somebody who's going to be pressuring me to go. I'm not going. I'm not going. We're not meant to be. So no.
Gym guys are out.
I don't think
I need to be any more clear as to what a gym guy is. I feel like you sussed that out real quick. So this is a common conundrum, though. For you, you would not want to be asked out of gym, at a gym, or by a guy named Jim, probably. You also would prefer not that.
Probably not.
If you are, Andrew on YouTube is saying, are we talking about gym guy, G-Y-M guy, or Jim guy, J-I-M-G-U-I.
His name is probably Jim.
There was a TV weather guy in this town by the name of Jim Guy.
Oh, all right. Well, he's never asked me out. So, for the record.
It's so confusing. So, this is a common question. I've seen it all over Reddit. I've seen it on TikTok videos where the gym feels like a fraught environment to ask someone out because people have such strong opinions on whether it's appropriate or not.
Yes. I think that people keep asking because when you go to the gym, everyone is in spandex. Mm. And so suddenly men feel really motivated, I guess, to ask people out there. I don't think that's a good enough reason to approach someone in an otherwise unpleasant setting. I think if you're okay knowing the odds are stacked against you, if you like a challenge, mm-hmm. feel free. But also be prepared for people to be annoyed with you. The gym isn't quite work, but it's like, this is where I go to work out. This is where I have.
But isn't this the most, like, to me, the gym feels like the most, like, if you're both at the gym, you have a shared interest. It's the most target-rich environment, in a way, outside of college, like, for grown-ups.
But I disagree because some of us, like you and me, we're there so we don't die prematurely. Yeah. We're there so things
hurt less. We're going to look like I'm going to look like I'm near death. Like probably no one's asking me out in that scenario, you know?
Well, I'm going to look angry so no one's asking me. Here's my thing. I think the gym is a bad idea. Why aren't people asking where they should ask people out? Why are we not focusing on that? Like, because the gym has been beaten to death. Don't ask people out of the gym. If you've had success, good for you.
Jonathan says, I just ask, do you need a spot? And if they say yes, then... So you can have like a non-threatening sort of... Maybe you don't go right off the bat with like...
Do you know like the... When I'm thinking of a spot, like the positioning of that, that's like a really aggressive way to first interact with somebody.
Is it?
Kind of.
What if you need a spot, though?
I don't.
I do. I certainly
Well,
need a spot.
If you see DeRusha in the gym, he's letting you know.
Yeah. Open for business. Yes. Right. Alyssa would be a little upset about that, I think.
I don't know.
So where should you ask people out? That's a very good framing. Because today I feel like no matter what you do, someone is ready to blow you up on social media for being disgusting. And this scummy guy asked me out at the gym when my theory is... If the guy is hot, no one ever complains. But if the guy is ugly, then it's what an absolute turd for asking me out at the gym.
I kind of hear that. Sometimes the guy is like your dad's age and that.
Yeah, not.
No, please.
No.
I think it's okay to ask people to use some context clues and some couth.
So where are the good spots, you think?
I think literally anywhere. The grocery store, the library, maybe not. Like the doctor's office, because that could get weird. But like, I don't think people are really asking where. I think people are asking where is there the least risk that I'm going to get rejected, and that place doesn't exist. Like, stay in your house, I guess, or stay on the apps, which also suck. But like, you have to build up the capacity for rejection. And yes, you want people to be nice about it. But I think generally speaking, I talk to my girlfriends who are dating, who are single, that people want to be approached. They want to be approached respectfully and they want to feel safe to say no. So all that has to be in place. Otherwise, most places.
Texter saying asking someone out at the gym is fine as long as you are willing to accept a firm no.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes sense. Are people not good at accepting a no?
I think a certain demographic of people sometimes has a hard time with it. Here's the thing with the gym. When I say a coffee shop, grocery store, the nice thing about those places is you're not necessarily going to repeatedly run into the person that you're asking out and that may be rejecting you. The gym, you're probably going to keep seeing each other. Mm. Maybe not every time, but like that's the other downside to that setting. I think you should like get comfortable asking people out in more random spots.
Well, to that Vane at 651-461-9226, texter asking, would you date the lawn man?
The lawn man? Who is the lawn man? There's types of people we're discussing.
I know, we had gym guy.
Gym guy.
Now we got lawn guy.
Yeah.
Well, like if you have a, like maybe you're in an apartment building and you've got like Braxton, the lawnmower guy, you know, Braxton comes and...
I own a home, so I am Braxton, the lawnmower guy. Mm.
You could hire.
And I think I'm a catch. I would date myself. But I don't have a Braxton.
I think, like, is that fair game to like, if you're a landscaper? I feel like I saw this movie once where, like, the landscaper knocks on the door.
On the Hallmark channel?
Yeah, Lawnmower Man, the horror film.
And instead of accepting the normal form of payment, Lawn Man, it's a different.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Then you had to go there.
All right.
Just saying.
I think Lawnmower Man was less, was more air friendly.
Was it? I don't know. Jason, I ask a girl if she is preparing for a competition or a show. It is an opening question and a compliment in one, says Matthew from Plymouth. That's his gym move.
I like that.
That's pretty good.
I like that. It's conversational, gives you the opportunity to see if there's like any like natural like banter spark. Fine. You still have to like be ready to read some cues and accept a no, even if that seems like it's going well. Some people just don't want to date people in the gym. Like, it's just like a hard no categorically.
Do you think all political candidates should maybe do a background check through you before they run for office?
I don't know about a background check. I don't offer that service, but they could certainly write to me and ask if perhaps some of their past behavior
is problematic,
would make them less than an ideal candidate.
Yeah, just saying. Let's break. Lots of text today. I love it. You have questions for Adri, any relationship advice, 651-461-9226. We have a couple topics as well, including destination weddings. Mm. Destination weddings. Do you have to go? Obviously, you don't have to go, but where are we on destination weddings? We'll talk about that when we come back. Ask Adri. You can follow her on Substack at Ask Adri. Drive time back in a minute. All right, we're doing advice with our friend Ask Adri. Ask Adri anything. You can follow her on Substack where she gets into it with all sorts of good questions. A lot of people have opinions on Lawn Man as to what Lawn Man might be watching our live stream right now and just seeing how fetching you are and shooting his shot.
Well, thank you, Lawn Man.
You never know.
I do have a lawn.
Text her with a question. Are you ready for this question? You haven't. This is the first you're hearing of it.
All right, let me hear it.
Would you date someone who moved here from 1,000 miles away with the intention of marrying you?
Is this a question for me? Or for you?
It's the next part that's the key.
Would you date someone who moved here from 1,000 miles away with the intention of marrying you, even though they have never met you, based on a true story, this texter? Whoa. So you see these stories every once in a while on TikTok, right? Like somebody who's going to move across the country because they feel like they found their person. And does it work? Is it a good idea? I don't know. What factors would you weigh in this? Because I do think there is a romantic side of that.
Yeah, there's a piece of it that's really romantic. And obviously there's precedent that still exists for like more arranged situations. But it doesn't sound like this is
this sounds
that.
Like,
it sounds like a love match.
Yep.
I just wonder how much you're uprooting your life, how hard it would be to kind of reel it back in, because there is a lot about liking each other and chemistry that you don't find out until you're in person and until you're spending significant time together. Like, not to be weird, but like, what if you get here and you don't like how they smell?
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's a valid reason to not date someone.
Yeah.
You're not going to change the way you smell.
And it's not even necessarily that they smell bad. Like, right. They just smell bad to you.
We sort of fooled ourselves with electronic communication to thinking that you're getting to know somebody just the same as if you were dating them in person or whatever, if we're FaceTiming or if we're texting or if we're video chatting in some other format, that now can replace the standard thing. And we've missed, like you talked about, that there is something to physical human presence that you cannot replicate through a screen.
I agree. And also, like,
the pressure,
people are curating.
Right? If you know that your first date is with someone who moved here for you,
oh my gosh,
isn't it hard to, like, really put your interests on an even level as the other person? The pressure dynamic is tough there.
Yeah, I would feel guilty if somebody did that for me.
Yeah.
And then it didn't work out. So much so that I would tell somebody not to do that.
I'm like just weighing this and thinking this through. There is some advantage. I wonder if today's generation of daters, if people are too quick to decide if it's an up or a down. Whereas, and some of this is like me applying my own story to everyone else's. But like when I first started dating my wife, I don't know, we had a good time and then we had another date. It wasn't a like, is this going to be my person? Like that wasn't part of the dynamic that early. And I feel like today, because you can sort of check boxes as to what you want, you think you're placing your DoorDash order for your life partner, that people are too quick to be like, oh, no, this isn't what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
No, I agree with that. I think also, I mean, how old were you when you met your wife again?
We were 19.
Right.
And children.
And so
we have more time, I guess.
I think a lot of people who are in the dating world who talk about it a lot are older and have spent years being kind of frustrated. And now they're like, no, I'm on a mission. I don't want anything that doesn't exactly match what I think I want and need. But I agree with you, Dan. Like, I think that people, because of dating app profiles and whatever, think that they know exactly what they want and what exactly is going to work for them, and also think that they are really accurately portraying themselves as well. And neither of those things is true.
One more question. We don't have a ton of time, but I wanted to get to this. Adrian, my sister is getting remarried. We found out over the holidays they're thinking of tying the knot in Cancun. Now, just before the holidays, we all booked a spring break together with my sister, her kids, her new fiance. We paid way more than we wanted to for this year's spring break trip to Mexico. And now they want to get married in Cancun. It's going to cost more than $1,200 for us. Do we say anything before the save the dates go out, or do we just swallow the spend? What do you do when you have a chance to at least sort of make a gentle, like, hey, this is going to be tough for us? What do you do?
I mean, boundaries, your own, enforcing them, that's your job. I think with financial stuff, it's pretty easy to just say, like, you have it or you don't. I think, too, I'm really biased because I think destination weddings are really often kind of ridiculous.
They suck.
They suck.
They're terrible. They're so selfish.
As well, in this country in particular, people have so little PTO, like increasingly less expendable income. So it's just asking a lot of people. And if they can make it work, that's really great and really generous. But I think when you plan one, you have to be prepared that it's not going to work for most people.
Tough if it's your sister, though.
Well, I mean, you're still going to be my sister after this wedding.
Kind of depends on the relationship, too, doesn't it?
If your sister didn't go to your wedding, wouldn't you be mad?
I did not get married in Mexico, and I'm divorced.
Fair.
So, whatever.
And I do think, like, divorced people, sometimes they're like, I'm going to do what I want. And that's fair, too.
That's what I think. Like, if I ever got remarried, I would do whatever I wanted.
Yeah,
and
course.
I would also not care if anyone goes.
Most people are not that magnanimous, though.
I'm not magnanimous. I just don't want to have to deal. I don't want to negotiate everyone else's needs.
I think it'd be fair to say, like, I'm coming and the rest of the family isn't. I think you could pull that card too.
I think so too.
Yeah, that's fine. Thanks, Adrian.
Yeah.
This was very good. We'll see you next month.
Good to see you.
Give Adrian Lee a follow on Substack. Just search Ask Adrie, A-D-R-I. DeRussia Eats is coming up in just a minute. We are going to talk to a national brand ambassador for Wild Turkey. How do you get that gig? Well, she's got an interesting family connection. So we'll talk about that. She's in town to, I don't know, hopefully, like, bring me a bottle of Wild Turkey. I assume that's why she flew to town. We'll talk about that when we come back. DeRussia Eats.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brought to you by the Minnesota Pork Board. Today we are talking spirits, we're talking whiskey, we're talking Wild Turkey, because our guest is originally from bourbon country here in the Tennessee, Kentucky area. Joanne Street is a Wild Turkey brand ambassador, which sounds like a dream job, Joanne. Like, I'm very jealous of this. It's not bad, right?
I can't complain. I get to travel the country and drink good whiskey with great people, and really nothing terrible about my day to day.
It's pretty good. You talk Wild Turkey, you talk Russell's Reserve, among other brands, but you've got a connection. You're part of the family, because that's what I think part of what is special about bourbon and about especially your American craft spirits is the fact that these are real people. Like, you see, well, most of them are, the names on these labels. But when you see the Russell's Reserve, which is my favorite bourbon, to be honest, but that is your uncle and grandfather, right?
It is, yeah. So I was born and raised down in Tennessee, but as my uncle gives me a good hard time about, made my way up to Kentucky, where we make the good bourbon. And I've been working with the brand for a little over 11 years, but my grandfather, Mr. Jimmy Russell, has been working at Wild Turkey for 72 years. He is the longest tenured master distiller in the spirit's history. My uncle is actually celebrating his 45th anniversary at Wild Turkey this past June. And I also got a cousin that works in the industry as well. So a little bit of a family affair we got going on down at Wild Turkey.
Did you, I mean, growing up around it and having it as part of your family, did you, I mean, so many people in the food industry or spirits industry, you're exposed at a young age and you sort of rebel a little bit, like, I don't know, is that the life for me? But there's something that sort of draws you back in. Was that your scenario, or were you always attracted to
it? A little bit of a different story for me compared to my cousin Bruce, who actually grew up in Kentucky. I think it was almost a shoe-in that, you know, you don't have to be at the distillery, but you know, it might be a good idea to show up. Growing up in Tennessee, I spent summers in Kentucky, and I really had the option to go to work at the distillery. And little did I know, when I went to work that very first day, I saw a different side of my family, different side of my grandfather and my uncle, in a way that they just talked, and the passion and the love that they had for this brand was something that I truly had never seen at home, because my grandmother, like most do a good job of making sure work's left at the door.
Yeah. How interesting, right, to see your family in that different... in that different angle. Any of us who've gone to work with our parents, for example, you sometimes see, like, oh, I didn't know mom was such a badass, right? Like, it's, there is a cool, different side of your parents you see.
Absolutely. And I think when I went to work that day, I saw a side of not only my grandfather, but also my uncle, and the excitement and the passion that they had to really bring people into our brand. We almost say, you know, he was holding church or holding court at our visitor center down in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. But the way that he brings people in, that makes it feel almost relatable. He's always curious. What's the story that brought you to our brand? What's that nostalgic factor that brought you to bourbon? What is that one story that you have about maybe the holiday or the first time you had a whiskey? And getting to really take a step back and kind of indulge yourself into those stories and those memories, it's quite enticing, and it kind of sucks you in a way, yeah, that you never want to step away.
Joanne Street is with us. We're talking bourbon. You know, all wine, spirits, beer, everything in America is having sort of this moment of like, all right, what's the future going to be? Bourbon went so crazy. What is your sense? You know, you're a younger drinker. Mm-hmm. What is your sense as to kind of how bourbon fits in to where this generation is going to want to celebrate and want to drink?
Absolutely. I think right now, more than anything, nostalgia is such a big factor of the world that we live in. We're so curious about what life was like 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And I think bourbon really kind of took off first post 9/11. And we, yeah, really came together as a country. And I think now more than ever, we're still seeing that we're coming together as a country, whether that be because of the World Cup here or whatever may be going on in the world. It's a sense of pride of being the only native spirit to the U.S. And we take a lot of joy in being able to bring that to our everyday consumer.
That kind of American nostalgia story, I think it is interesting. We used to, like, you didn't really know that much about this stuff. And, like, today, like, the hardcore bourbon nerds, like, they know everything about this stuff. But then you have the more casual people who are just out looking to have a good time and a good drink, right?
Yeah, I think there's a sense of curiosity right now as well as we broaden our horizons and our knowledge on the spirits category as a whole, not only just bourbon, but whatever spirit you may be enjoying along the way. And I think that curiosity really brings a sense of you know, intrigueness, if that's a word, I guess I could say, to
may
this.
As well.
Yeah, might as well. Yeah, I promise I haven't had a sip of bourbon yet. I promise. But it brings that kind of sense of curiosity from that younger generation. But the beautiful thing about what we do at Wild Turkey is I think that we have something for everyone in the portfolio, whether that be someone who learned to love Wild Turkey from their grandfather, or their uncle, or their grandmother, or someone who's just stepping into the category and looking for a great whiskey to enjoy by itself or in a cocktail. I think we hit every aspect of that spectrum when it comes to that Wild Turkey consumer.
Wild Turkey 101 is like my go-to whenever I'm like out of town or wherever and I don't know like where a good liquor store is. You're like, you can find it everywhere. It's reliable. It's delicious. It's affordable. But you guys have been launching a bunch of different expressions as well, right? Like, tell me about this. I'm holding an 8-year Wild
sure.
Turkey 101.
Absolutely. So actually, Wild Turkey 8-year age stated 101 was the very first product to ever hit the market back in 1942. And we maintained that age statement up until the 90s. And then as the bourbon category continued to grow, when we started to see this expansion out of Japan and Australia and more so into the U.S. consumer, we realized that we needed to continue to broaden the horizons of our portfolio. So today, your standard Wild Turkey 101 is typically a 6 to 8-year-old age statement. But what built us, what continues to build us as a company, is that 8-year 101. So we decided to bring that age statement back a few years ago in honor of Jimmy's 70th anniversary. And we've now made it a mainstay in our portfolio for our everyday whiskey consumer.
You've got this special bottle, too, that you brought in. This is a gold foil edition. What a unbelievable display and container. What's this guy?
This one is for the whiskey nerds and just Wild Turkey nostalgic lovers alike. This is actually my cousin Bruce Russell, third generation blender at Wild Turkey's first solo release with the brand. And it's paying kind of homage to a lot of the things that we love that Jimmy was making back in the 70s and the 80s. And cheesy gold foil for my whiskey nerds out there. Definitely know what I'm talking about. One of our most sought after bottles. Originally was 12 years old at 101 proof. But lucky for you all, we had a little bit of older whiskey in the mix. So the age statement on this one is going to be right at 16 years old and right around 120 proof.
All right, Joanne, can you stand by through the break? I want to ask you just like, what is your job like? Like, you're here in the Twin Cities, you're going to be visiting some liquor stores. So I want to know, like, what is the job of a brand ambassador? Sounds pretty good. Drive time with DeRussia. DeRussia Eats. We'll be back in just a minute here on CCO. Continental Diamond Time Check right now is 454, locally owned. It is where I go to find luxury pre-owned timepieces. Amazing selection. If you're looking for something, they got you. If you have a watch you want to sell, get to ContinentalDiamond.com. They're in St. Louis Park. We are visiting with Joanne Streep. She is a brand ambassador for the Campari Group. Which you do American whiskey. So you talk Russell's Reserve, you talk Wild Turkey, among others. Joanne, here in the Twin Cities, you have a full schedule, right? Visiting a bunch of liquor stores. That's sort of the job, right? Talking to the consumer, talking to the retailers also.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. I talk to the consumer, I talk to the retailer, I talk to the bartender whenever you go enjoy your favorite cocktail. So my job is really focused in the education behind our brands and the marketing side of what we do at Wild Turkey and really bringing those stories to life and the understanding of why we make whiskey the way that we do.
So tonight, Brian, people can see Joanne tonight at France 44, right? France 44.
France 44.
Oh, it's sold out. Too bad. Too bad. We'll go buy some whiskey. Texters are saying, one texter says, I love this lady, but I need to have some whiskey now.
Sounds like a great Tuesday problem.
Yeah, that is a good Tuesday.
It's a turkey
problem.
Tuesday, right?
I like that.
Yeah.
Very good. When you look at, well, I mean, I know one of the groups that you're meeting with in town here is the Minnesota Women Who Whiskey chapter. I've noticed over the last, especially the last 5 or 6 years, many more women coming forward who are, you know, there used to be the stereotype, and I would see it. My wife loves whiskey, and the bartender would offer me whiskey and ask if she wanted vodka. And she was like, I am a manlier drinker than Jason. Like, are you seeing that trend, more women being bold about about drinking brown liquor?
Absolutely. And I think it happened, you know, many, many years before what we've seen in the last 5 to 10, for sure. But, you know, there's nothing I love more than walking up to a bar and asking for a Wild Turkey Neat and kind of getting that funny little look over to myself.
Right? It's pretty good. Well, Minnesota, we love, obviously, we love bourbon. We love whiskey in this state because it's damn cold. And that's what we have to
do. You got
to
stay warm somehow. That's why we make it.
In our last 20 seconds, what went wrong with the U.S. in the World Cup yesterday? What happened?
Hot take. Well, I do know that you all should come visit us down in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky at our distillery. after you're done watching the World Cup the rest of the summer, we'd love to have you visit us down in Kentucky. So cheers, y'all. Have a great week.
It is a great experience to get down there and visit a distillery. It's a connection with America, really, mm-hmm. I think. So especially on this Independence Day weekend. It's something that only we do.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool.
Still bummed about that loss last night, but I'll heal my wounds with a little whiskey.
It solves a lot of problems. Creates some others. You got to be cautious. Joanne, thank you. Really appreciate it. Wild Turkey is the spirit. Drive Time. Local news coming up.
Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week. Hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Twin Cities Sheriff is talking about it. It's something we've talked about on this show, but I think a lot of people are scared to discuss it. We have a gang problem in the Twin Cities, and right now the main gang activity is centered in the Somali community. Young Somali people who are making trouble. Sheriff came on today to talk about the increase in gang activity. Perhaps you've seen some of the video from over the weekend. There have been a number of shootings in the Twin Cities, in the suburbs, in northeast Minneapolis and north Minneapolis. There was a murder this weekend. We cannot let political correctness stop us from addressing a real issue in the community, and that's what the sheriff was bringing up. Is the sheriff right? Are we worried about being too PC? And is that making the Twin Cities less safe? I think it is, and I think we can do something that is difficult. We can talk about a gang problem in one group in the Twin Cities without being racist about it. Here are a couple of the comments. I want to play a couple of the comments, and I welcome your input at 651-461-9226. This is Sheriff Bob Fletcher, who was on with Vanita this morning. So first, I want you to hear him talk about how many young people were concerned about, because to me, it's a lot. It's a lot of young people, and also it's a small number of people in general.
There's 100,000 Somali people in Minnesota, and we're really targeting 300. You know, it's a very 300 young youth that are misguided and need some redirection and correction and accountability. To be honest with you, putting some of them in jail is a part of the solution.
I think that's right. We have had more kind of, I don't want to say soft approach, but we've struggled with putting young people in jail. And look, I don't think anybody believes that a good long-term solution for a 14, 15, 16-year-old is a 20 or 30-year prison sentence. But people got to get locked up, right? There's been this local wave of violence. And it's okay to talk about it, right? I think it's okay to talk about it. And Bob Fletcher has some credibility here in Ramsey County, in St. Paul. He has been actively working with the Somali community. So he's not coming at this from kind of the perspective that some of the Facebook crime group warriors kind of come from. I thought this statement was very interesting when he was on with Vanita this morning, because I do think this statement, I want you guys to listen to it and react to it at 651-461-9226, because I do think that our Midwestern Minnesota kindness does have us censoring what we would say if this were gangs in North Minneapolis, if this were 20 years ago when we had problems with Hmong gangs in this community, if it was 30 years ago when it was Latino gangs. Here is what Sheriff Fletcher said about the situation with Somali gangs right now.
The ICE surge and all the other things going on have prevented us from actually talking about this problem. And I, in good conscience, just couldn't continue to pretend that it wasn't a problem.
I think the sheriff is spot on. There is a fraudulence, and I choose that word intentionally, but there is a fraudulence in seeing all these social media videos where you see what's going on and who's involved, and then this unwillingness to just say what the reality is. Part of the reason that we got an out-of-control fraud problem in the state of Minnesota is that people were too afraid to just be honest about what was going on. In the state government, people were too afraid to say, this seems like BS. This seems unbelievable. And why was there fear? Because they were afraid they were going to be called racist. Was that fear well-founded? Yes, they were sued by the white lady who was running the whole thing. They were sued and accused of being racist. I do think there has to be a way for people who are fair, who are good, well-intentioned, non-racist people to discuss what is a real issue. And right now, if you believe the sheriff's numbers, we got 300 or so young Somali kids who need some consequences if they're breaking the law. And I think our fear is holding us back. So we can talk about things. 651-461-9226. One texter, lock them up or deport them. So I will point out that despite the rhetoric from the president, the rhetoric from Tom Emmer, the rhetoric from the Republican Party that has decided that Somali Minnesotans are sort of the shorthand kind of political pawn when you want to talk about fraud, when you want to talk about illegal immigration. But the facts are that most Somalis in Minnesota are citizens. Most were born here. And certainly, if you're talking about young people who are involved in gangs, I would wager that almost all of these folks are second generation, straight up Americans. So that's the type of discussion about this that, frankly, it allows liberals to just say, yeah, it's all racist. It's all racist. It's not racist to discuss this. We've talked about these gang issues as a community, and gangs are generally people of the same ethnicity or race. It's just the reality. It's a gang. You're hanging out with your people. I think it's all right to name it. A texter is saying, thank you for talking about this issue. It's not racist when you're just being honest and transparent. I do think the way the sheriff talked about it is right. There are 100,000 people in this community. You cannot say in the Somali Minnesota community, you cannot look at that whole group and be like, it's a bunch of fraudsters and it's a bunch of gangbangers. No, absolutely not. but not talking about it, what good does that do? What good does that do? What has that done for us? Nothing. And so we can talk about it. Now, does it mean that every time there's a crime, you have to say, Somali murder? No. And if that's your approach, think hard about why you feel that's important, right? But when we're talking about a trend, I think it's okay. Not I think it's okay. It is okay to talk about the trend, talk about what's going on. And in fact, it's necessary to talk about it. Lots of texts coming in at 651-461-9226. When citizens take being PC too far as to insist on not demanding accountability by others, not following the law and harming others, that is a huge problem. Has nothing to do with racism. If you do bad things, no matter who you are, you need to pay the price. I'm tired of the racism excuse at allowing bad things to go unpunished. I do think that consequences have to be a part of the equation. And we cannot allow our community to fall into a lawless situation. And every summer, we're always a little bit on the precipice of that, right? You always feel that moment as the temperatures heat up, the nights get longer, the grudges get angrier, and you see more shootings and more violence. And it's okay to talk about it. And frankly, I do think that there's an opportunity here for our Somali business owners, for our elected officials, to also step up and be a voice about this and talk about the fact that, like, we need to do a better job. We need to get these young people and get these gangs under control. And I think if you had a group of gang members in Uptown who are white, you would expect the city council member for that area to stand up and say something. And I think that I'm curious to see who's going to seize this opportunity to step forward and try to help do the right thing. We saw this with fraud. When there was the former Department of Justice guy who wrote a story, I think, for The Independent, talking about some of the cultural issues in his own community. And he came on our show, and I thought it was very helpful. Texters pointing out that in 2022, remember, we had the fireworks sort of chaos. Michael Rainville, the city council member, said, rightly, says this texter, he was going to the mosque to talk to the imams. And they turned that into, like, he's a huge racist, but really, like, that's a reasonable thing to do. Now, hopefully, Sheriff Fletcher stepping up in talking about this is going to kind of clear the way to dealing with the problem. And text her another thing, if you listen, and you should check out the podcast, the whole interview with Sheriff Fletcher and Vanita, but saying that the imams want to help steer the moms want to help steer their children in the right direction for their own good, which I think is right. I don't want to see our political correctness and our fear of being called racist keeping us from addressing a real safety issue in our community. 651-461-9226. More drive time when we come back. Just a reminder, we are giving away Twins tickets today, Twins Ticket Tuesday. So keep listening. I mean, you got a pretty good chance, I would say. Tickets we're giving thanks to Luther Kia Bloomington. Great, beautiful new dealership at 35W and 494 in Bloomington. But they power Twins Ticket Tuesday, and we appreciate their support. The giveaway is to four tickets to Saturday's game. So make sure you can go and be ready when you hear that sound. We're talking about the sheriff from Ramsey County today basically saying what law enforcement is known, but I think there's a fear in our community to talk about the fact that right now, when we have a gang problem, the gang problem is largely young Somali men. And the sheriff said there are 100,000 Somalis in our state, in our community. And he's only talking about 300. My question to you is whether this fear, whether the fear is preventing us from taking reasonable action at 651-461-9226. How much of this is created by politicians, says the texter. When political parties want to weaponize issues rather than work together to solve problems, it creates this kind of environment. We know the weaponization that has happened towards the Somali community. Do we believe some people want to honestly solve the problem? I think that's a great text, and it's a great point, because it is difficult to take some people's supposed concern for this issue seriously. You know, when they do things like post on social media and retweet videos showing a bunch of young people, wearing hijabs. And the president of the United States posted, reposted End Wokeness. Public school in St. Paul, Minnesota. Every girl is in a hijab in kindergarten. To which I would say, great, I'm glad those girls are at school in kindergarten. What is the complaint? What are we doing? So, yes, I do think you can look at the motivations of some people, because some people have a desperation to be able to say Somali, 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 when really what they're saying is, I'm racist, I'm racist, I'm racist, I'm racist. And we have to be able to talk about reality. If there is a gang problem in the Twin Cities, which there is, and if that gang problem is, has a nexus in the Somali community, then we got to talk about it. We got to figure out in that community, who are the faith leaders who are going to step up? Who are the business owners? Who are the parents? Who are the elected officials? Who's going to step up and help us put an end to this and figure it out? Because we have seen other first generation immigrant groups have similar challenges. And we've also seen a willingness to be honest and get with it and get it together. Texters point out that the Hmong people were incredible at taking care of their low-income housing in Minneapolis off 94 and Broadway. Texter says, best people I ever met. Another texter says, the problem is that first-generation immigrants are often so insular that you foster a community that develops gangs. As Americans, we need to support the first-generation immigrants so they never get to that point of their kids feeling lost and feeling like they must join a gang. I think that's an interesting text. It does go to the fact that this is complicated stuff, and the reason that I bring up the fact that in our community, we had challenges with young Hmong people and lawlessness. We had challenges with young Latino immigrants and gangs and lawlessness. And there is some responsibility on us that when we welcome immigrants to our community, and yeah, you can just say like, deport them, I don't want it. Well, they're here. So enough with that. That's not helpful. How do we do a better job so this isn't the outcome? I think that's a reasonable question. I also think that it's reasonable to say today we also are where we are with the gang problem, and having kumbaya conversations is not necessarily going to get it done. That some people are going to have to be locked up. There are going to have to be consequences, because otherwise it just keeps going. So I'm optimistic with the sheriff coming forward and talking about it, and I want to see more of it. There are plenty. The political structure in Minneapolis and St. Paul is Democrats. And Democrats have had a real challenge in expressing a desire to have law and order. And I think that is foolish for the Democratic Party. You do not have to cede. No political party should cede any issue to the other side, because everybody wants to feel safe in their community. It's not a controversial issue. People want to feel safe. And so a little bit of reclaiming the dialogue, I think, would be useful. Let's break. It's 5:30. In just a minute, we're going to talk about collecting. Do you collect anything? I want you to text in with what you collect. And that Greg Swan is going to take that conversation in a direction that I think you'll find interesting. 651-461-9226. Just text, what do you collect? Greg Swan explaining the internet in just a minute on CCO.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Greg Swan explains the internet. Greg is with us in studio. It's good to see
here
you, my
friend.
Here
we are. I'm so excited about this topic today.
Well, this idea of collecting is fascinating to me. And I did ask people to text in at 651-461-9226. Would you like to know what people are collecting?
Oh, I can't wait to find out. Did you know 40 to 60% of Americans actively collect things?
I'm not surprised, because I've been in a lot of people's houses over the years, and people have a lot of weird crap.
I think we tend to think of that as like a boomer thing, or maybe an older generation thing, but that's not true. And I can't wait. What are they collecting?
Pinball machines.
Oh my. Oh, that's an expensive one.
That is expensive.
I'm jealous. Your basement
jealous.
Is loud.
Old baseball cards.
Okay, classic.
Old clocks, star note bills, firearms, prints. Been collecting for years. Prints albums that are not opened.
Ooh,
oh, magazines,
cool.
CDs, old coins and bills. I collect rocks and empty boxes.
Oh, I love this.
I think a lot of us collect empty boxes. I mean,
yeah,
that is
see
true.
My garage right now.
Agates. Chris in Farmington collects agates and bicentennial quarters.
Oh, these are great. I just imagine at the clock person's house, like what it sounds like at noon. I'm just like that explosion of sound. And it's so fun, because that's culture.
So
right?
Part of what is amazing about this topic, and what I like about you exploring this topic, is that we have this idea that the collectors are old people. Some are, and by old, I mean Gen X and above.
Yeah, it goes
you,
in.
Do you collect anything?
Of course I collect things, but I don't necessarily have a curio cabinet of things that I'm going to dust.
Yep.
And that was what I was exploring.
We used to have teacups, like antique teacups. We have, I collected antique radios for a bit. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Look at me now.
I mean, they add up.
Now I work on an antique radio. So
that's
antique radio station.
There's a delightful thing that's happening with Gen X and millennials, and it's all really all generations, but we're starting to collect digital things. And okay.
What does that mean
like your camera roll is full of garbage things, or that does not mean NFTs. But what that does mean is that we are able to use our phones to identify things and save them down to an album and share them, unlike ever before. And the first thing that we're collecting is birds.
Birds.
Have you become a bird person yet?
Not yet, but I know you are. You are all in.
I mean,
you?
So I'm pulling out my pair of binoculars, right?
I do like. I like. You know, when you see the bird landing on the back porch.
Yeah. So it used to be you would spot the bird through your binoculars.
Yeah.
And maybe you write it down in your life log paper book, and then that's it.
Right.
But now, oh my gosh, thanks to Bird Buddy and all of those cool camera bird feeders.
So my mom has one of these, the Bird Buddy feeder.
And they're taking pictures of birds, they're identifying them, and then you can share them. you save them into your album, and you can share them. And we're seeing an explosion on social of people that are getting very into bird collecting or bird watching and bird collecting. And the other app that's really fueling this is called Merlin. And Merlin is from Cornell. It's a free app. And you essentially turn on your phone and it listens for birds around you. And then it logs what it's hearing into your wave list.
Really?
It is so cool because it is hearing birds that you can't see. And then it shows you what it looks like and you can go try to see them. Right. And every day there's a different challenge. It knows exactly where you are. And it's like, there should be a red-winged blackbird around you. Try to go hear one.
Whoa.
Right. So we're gamifying the idea of going outside.
Right.
And also using AI technology, visual technology to really explore what is around you in a different way than what your grandparents maybe did when they were bird watching.
It is, in many ways, the ability to use AI, to use the fact that you've got a video camera, microphone,
access to this, your phone. This huge large language model that knows what every bird sounds like, what it looks like, and it can help you identify them.
So do you think people are interested in the discovery or in the collection of like ticking off, oh, I saw this, I saw that, I saw that?
I think it's hitting different pieces for different people. And also, there are so many memes right now about people of our generation. Things that say, remember, folks, if you're ever trying to buy beer or wine and you forgot your ID, you can always show them you have Merlin installed on your phone, and legally they have to accept that. I don't know if the Wild Turkey vendors will accept
that. I don't know
they
would take it, no.
It's been really fun to see that, and then also to start to share that with other generations and sitting outside and being able to teach your kids what those birds are, or to just learn more about nature in a way that you might not have before without that technology.
That's pretty cool. Greg Swan is with us. Every month he explains the internet. We're talking about collecting in a digital sense, and the birds are part of it. The first thing I thought of when you mentioned this topic was the Pokemon type situation, where I have to tell you, like, I am amazed to see like people lining up around Target, knowing like when the drop is, because it's like sometimes it's like middle of the day or something, and you're looking, you're like, why are all of these grown-ups standing? But it is the Pokemon phenomena is still huge.
It's still going on. So
it's not just COVID when we were all doing Pokemon Go.
Oh, so yesterday is the 10-year anniversary of the launch of Pokemon Go.
Huh.
And I remember, I worked downtown Minneapolis at the time. I remember the crowds of people coming around.
I was doing it, man.
And I was working at a local agency in the North Loop, and I was loading up one of those gyms so that people would specifically come by, and we're high-fiving them out the window. So that notion that like you could use your phone to unlock a digital collectible and save it is something that has been in the zeitgeist for 10 years.
Yeah, pretty cool. All right, so we're collecting birds.
Collecting birds.
But you've also become a bit of an aviation enthusiast.
So I've been attending a number of Twins games lately, and if you've been to a Twins game at our beautiful Target Field, you know there are planes that fly right overhead. And sometimes you're wondering, I wonder where that came from. I wonder what kind of plane that is. I wonder where they're landing. And you can use a number of different apps to track them. Flight 24 is the big one that everyone uses. Flight Radar 24, just really a free app where you can see a radar of where you're nearby and click on it and see where that plane's coming. But there's new apps coming where you can collect them and you can log that you saw that plane. You can share a photo of that, and then it'll actually tell you if you've seen that plane before.
Huh.
And so this is going to unlock a whole new level of plane nerddom, which I am here for.
All right, let's talk more about that. Other things that are collecting. So many texts. Keep the texts coming. Everything that you're collecting.
Oh, I can't wait to hear them.
One texter asking if our guest is 70 years old. I think you have the soul of a 70-year-old, perhaps.
You too could be a 70 years old with using apps and AI.
More with Greg Swan when we come back here on Drive Time. We're talking about collecting and the fact that collections have continued. They've never stopped. They're living on the internet. Greg Swan is with us discussing this. We actually got a phone call, Greg.
Oh, my gosh. I cannot wait to hear.
Andy in Uptown wants to tell us. Andy, what do you collect?
Well, I'm from Duluth, born and raised. I've been living here for 25 years, and I collect Duluth stuff. Old photographs, souvenir items, anything I can find related to Duluth or the history of Duluth.
Oh, I love that. Do you take photos of any of that stuff? Do you keep an archive of that?
I don't. My aunt, every once in a while, I'll find photos and she'll post it on, there's a couple local Duluth history sites and stuff like that. So
that's great. Is the thrill in the hunt of finding it or of having it?
A little bit of both. It's always, I do estate sales for a living. I've been doing it since I was a teenager up in Duluth. And so it's, a lot of people have old photo albums and they travel. And, most of the photo albums, people really don't care anymore. If they don't, they don't have the relatives listed, they don't know who it is. But, a lot of people, they'll take a weekend trip up to Duluth and you'll find these old black and white photos. And, a lot of common ones of the lift bridge and ships and stuff like that. But I like old architecture. So I like when they've taken pictures, near downtown or, areas that aren't so touristy and stuff like that.
That's cool, Andy.
But it's, I've found things, 25 years ago when I got started in the business that I have never seen since. So
good stuff. Thank you, Andy. Pez dispensers, says a texter, wristwatches, pink depression era glass, Coca-Cola toys. People collect all sorts of stuff.
You know where else they find stuff?
Where?
eBay, Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah.
Like the internet is helping us collect those things.
One of the things that I think people worry about in these sort of collection apps, like you're at the Twins game and you're looking at your phone. Does this have you less present in the real world?
I think that that's a good question to have. And also, there was a teenager playing Pokemon Go sitting in front of me at the Twins game while I'm taking pictures of the planes while other people are watching YouTube videos. And so to each his own, arguably some of these apps, and there's another one called iNaturalist where you can identify plants around you. There's even one where you can identify cats, your local neighborhood cats called Catch Cat. That's helping you understand more about what's going on around you. And if technology and AI can be used to unlock more of the real world and bring us together, then that's the best possible outcome for this technology.
Yeah, I mean, you could really make a case that this is making you more present, more observant, more connected to what's going on in the real world.
And I'm starting to learn the sounds of the planes to be able to identify them. My kids are making so much fun of me.
This is such great dad material,
right?
Oh,
man, it's just a whole new way. I'm not 70 plus years old, but I got a lot of respect for them.
Greg Swan has a Substack that you can subscribe to, and you should. It's called Social Signals by Greg Swan. Greg, we thank Finn Partners for allowing you to come on with us. Greg is a partner there and thinking about stuff in the future, and this is right in there for sure. Good stuff. Thank you, Greg.
See you on the internet.
Continental Diamond Time Check. It is 5:57. They love hearing about people who are collecting estate jewelry or pre-owned luxury timepieces. They have a great collection of both that you can check out at continentaldiamond.com. Dan and I will be back with you tomorrow, so let's get a Twins win tonight. Here are the home of the Twins, WCCO.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.